Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Hello, No Spinners. This is Tommy Joe Lucia. Welcome to No Spin Rodeo. This is episode number 21. And of course, I've got what I would call the guardians of rodeo with me, Greg Teagarden, our producer. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Actually, it's 5:30 in the afternoon, stupid. hello, Kendra. This is the first lady of pro rodeo journalism and one of my favorite people to argue with, Miss Kendra Santos. How are you, Kendra?
I'm great. Thank you.
You know, when I ask you, you're always so, I'm great. Thank you. Is that a precursor to, I'm going to rip your head off in a minute?
No, I'm really great. Oat just flew in today for Valentine's Day and to help me move back into my house for the next week. And I'm very grateful.
Love is in the air. It's Valentine's. Right. That's cool. That's cool. That's why you've got that glow. You've got the oat glow, we call it. When oats around you, you've got the oat glow.
Golly.
Anyway, well, cool things. Biggest thing in as we do a little kind of chat around the room about what's been going on.
The Super Bowl.
Yeah. The Super Bowl was super cool.
Yes.
Now, who did you – didn't – Kendra, you went for San Francisco, right?
Of course I did. Sure. That was a great game. You guys both went for the Chiefs, as I recall. I was the Lone Ranger. But great game. And by the way, blocked extra point. My team would have won. That was just a great game. Nobody likes a blowout in the Super Bowl. That was a riveting, amazing game. I hated to see so many injuries. By the way, did somebody tell me at lunch today that Brock Purdy – and another thing, to back up just a minute, don't ever call me out and act like I don't know what positions my quarterback and running back are. But anyway, but I did hear that – what do they call Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant or whatever, last draft pick? Okay. I was told at lunch today by my son and daughter-in-law, they were talking about the fact – if this is correct, that Purdy is paid less than a few college football players now. Like, he is paid so low, which surely will change. But they said he's paid like $500,000 a year or something. And I'm like, what? Isn't that something?
Yeah, he's on that first-year contract deal, right, where all those guys, they don't get much when they first come on. And then they become starters and the revenue caps become an issue when they know they have to renegotiate with him. He is just like, I couldn't help. This was the first time in the Super Bowl that I was really kind of rooting for both teams. Like, I didn't really care. I really didn't care who won or lost. Purdy is cool. McCaffrey is the coolest white guy athlete I've ever seen in my life. And first, we were like, oh, did you see what Kelce did to the coach? And it started blowing up on the internet, you know, when he went up and yelled at Andy Reid, you got to keep me in. And I said, I bet Reid shuts that down. And then I watched an interview on the end where Andy Reid's like, you know, kind of like we are, I'd rather have a horse that I've got to slow down than one I've got to kick. And I mean, that's the way I took it. And he said he came back and apologized. But everybody was like, I hate Kelce. That's why. Well, I don't understand why all of a sudden everybody hates Travis Kelce because of Taylor Swift. Like, you know, they're in a relationship. And I don't know why it's Taylor Swift's fault that the NFL shoots her a shot of her all the time. That's not – I bet she – maybe I'm wrong. But I don't know that it's – Taylor and Travis is.
I bet.
Screwing up the Chiefs.
Did they? You know how they do the economic impact, like on Las Vegas or Houston or whatever. That's hundreds of millions of dollars. Pretty sure they included on the telecast, like the Swift effect was worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the NFL. So what's not, why would they be upset about that? I mean, goodness gracious.
And the other thing that drives me nuts, and I've got friends that believe this, and there, we probably have listeners that believe this, that the NFL is rigged, right? And I, and they're like, see, told you, because of Taylor Swift, Kansas City had to win. They already had it scripted. How do you script 280-pound humans, 22 of them, ramming each other with a pigskin? It drives me nuts. But it, you're right. It was a great game. Greg, did you watch it?
Oh, yeah. Start to finish. Great game. I actually thought that San Francisco was going to pull it out, but then Mahomes came in and does what he does. You know, didn't do much all game, and then at the last, you know, he's got 2 minutes, boom.
Well, and the last thing that I thought was cool is I saw something on social. So the very last play of the game, you know, when the guy was wide open for the touchdown, they showed a video of Andy Reid telling his coaches, this was like 7 days earlier, here's this play that I'm going to keep in my hip pocket. You know, it's an X right 33 dolphin flip 99, you know, and they're like, what happens here? Well, two go this way. And he goes, he'll be wide open. Mahomes will just toss it to him. I mean, that guy's brilliant. I mean, yep. He looks like Grandfather Reed. I mean, yep. You know, you're like, you want to go sit in his lap and share cocoa with him, but it's just, he's cool. Mm-hmm. He's cool. Anything else going on? So where are you at on the house? We need a house progress report, Kendra.
Down to that punch list, you know, like, I don't know, 15 or 20 things that are, you know, like in the middle of the living room right now, there's like all the extra baseboard. And there are huge boxes of leftover wood floor that I'm told don't put it in storage because you'll warp it or whatever. It needs to be climate controlled, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's getting close. But what I realize is that I don't want half of the stuff that was in my house before back in now. Isn't that interesting? Like I'm ready for sparseness. It's beautiful.
It drives me. I know, but so on that, you know, we just moved into a house. Well, I guess I didn't realize that not only do we have to spend the money to build the new house, but everything that was in our old house doesn't work now. I mean, it's the wrong color. It doesn't set in the wrong spot. So not only, by the way, if you're building a new house and you're married, you may want to consider a sizable amount of your budget for refurnishings. Because if the colors are different, then all of a sudden, the giant couch that's very comfortable, out the door. So there you have it.
I got two words for you about your wife, Donna. Worth it. You buy that furniture.
Oh, I agree.
And she'll rock the new house, and you'll be so happy.
Well, I'm an earth tones guy, and we're going lighter, modern. We're going Pinterest. So there you have it. All right. It's going to look great. So. All right, well, Kendra, let's get into what we talk about. We are Sports Radio of Rodeo, is what we like to say around here. Our lead on this is Kendra Santos. Kendra, get us started talking about what's happened in the last couple weeks in the world of professional rodeo.
I want to talk about Josh Edwards at the top. You know, Fort Worth ended right after we recorded our last podcast, but Josh Edwards retiring, that threw me for a loop. I did not see it coming. I don't know how many people knew. I watched that and I was blown away. Didn't know. He's 45, so he's still young. Anyway, I couldn't help myself, so I called him. I mean, 2023 PRCA Picket Man of the Year, just worked his second NFR in December. You know, he's a guy who works like San Angelo, Dodge City, Cheyenne, like, you know, he's like a big gun, obviously reigning Picket Man of the Year. So I don't think any of us really saw that coming, but talking to him.
No. I actually knew. So at the awards banquet, when he won, when it was all over, after I had hugged Anthony and then I saw Josh still talking in the corner of the room, and I went over there and gave him a big hug. Because he is a classic human, like very intelligent, very successful, very cowboy, very everything that I aspire all of our people to be. I gave him a hug and I said, congratulations. And he said, I'm done. And I said, what? I thought he meant with, you know, the night, right? Because everybody's tired. He says, no, I'm going to do the NFR. And he told me, he said, I'm going to do Fort Worth. And that's it. And I said, really? And he goes, yep. He said, I think it's time to do other things. So
well, I don't know
if he told anybody else or.
That's cool. And it rocked me a little bit because I did not see it coming. But I thought, you know, how we've talked quite a lot about people going out on top of their game. And I think we're all fans of that. That's cool. But like he was saying to me, like there were some things that happened. Well, for one thing, on the Fort Worth, you know, his first Fort Worth was 25 years ago in 1999 on the labor list for Rafter G Rodeo, where he was like untying calves and stuff like that. So, you know, this was his 25th year to work that rodeo, but like, and by the way, technically the American is going to be his literal last rodeo to be a picket man because he did a handshake word to somebody and he's a man of his word. But like he was saying that some older gentleman said something to him that really struck a chord. And that's that you have 18 summers with your kids. Josh and Christy's kids now, they have two boys. Blevin is 16 and Brennan is 13. And Blevin wants to be a pilot, which Josh is also a pilot. And Brennan is riding, what they ride, steers with Bronc saddles now, I guess, in their younger coming up. And that's what he's into. And so, you know, Josh is like, you know, it's been all about me and it's time. That really hit home with him. And also, he has seen a lot of people ride, we all have, people ride the merry-go-round of the ups and downs and ups and downs. And he's like, I'm, you know, king of the mountain. And that may never happen again. And so I don't want to be the old bitter guy who sticks around too long and then, you know, is either forced to quit or goes out, you know, pissed off and sour is the words, you know, as he put it. And so, but super cool. This is not totally shocking, but I also wouldn't have seen it coming. Have you ever heard of the Mongol Derby? I have never heard of this. So
what is it?
In August. So Josh has done things. He's done cool things like triathlons and stuff in the past. So in August, he will be the first like rodeo cowboy type person to participate in the Mongol Derby. So Josh this is a 1,000-kilometer race, which that's 621 miles across Mongolia on 13-hand, 900-pound wild horses. That like the nomads and the herders round up for this. You get 15 pounds of gear, 10 days to complete the course. Our very own Josh Edwards is entered in the Mongol Derby this August. Is that cool or what?
Well, are they broke horses?
They're wild.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how you do this. So you got 15 pounds of gear in you and a 600-mile trail ride ahead of you. You just jump on and hang on for dear life for four days?
I've never seen it, but you have 10 days to complete it. So, and he said he put in for it a few years ago, and that was another one of these, there's your sign moments, like maybe 4 years ago or something. He started like applying and he gets word that he's accepted this August. Well, so he can't be at Dodge City. He's going to be in Mongolia. Anyway, that's pretty badass.
That is. It's interesting. It's interesting. So, I thought you said he was going to be riding camels or something. That's right.
Well, I don't know what 900-pound wild horses in Mongolia exactly look like, but anyway, so here.
It's worth a Google.
Here we go. Worth a Google. I did do that, but I almost want to go and like be a reporter.
You know what we could do? I wonder if it's like a bike race where you got to have your little team members that, you know, you ride ahead of them 100. Why don't you and I do that? Maybe they put us on like Shetland ponies. Yeah. And we race ahead and we chunk him water bottles and protein bars when he runs by.
Hey, I think I might be in on that. Anyway, okay, so the same day, this is a sad thing, a very unexpected, untimely death in our rodeo family. The same day that Josh retired, Sydney Skiver died, mother of three young children, after a very brief, like my, I think like one day illness. And from people, family and friends, I was told influenza B, and then somebody else said COVID. I don't know which is it, but when you go to the hospital and they put you on a vent and you die within like a day. Sydney was 27, the little sister of PRCA and NFR bareback rider RC Landingham, and longtime bareback rider Ty Skiver, who is a bootmaker. I don't know Ty really, but I've seen him around a little bit with RC. And Ty Skiver and RC's mom, Wendy, had Sydney. Anyway, I don't know how well you know RC Landingham. I got to know him better a couple of years ago when he was on the Triple Crown of Rodeo path with the WCRA and got to spend some time with him. And RC Landingham, he's quiet, but like, and he did, he's the only person ever to win the Triple Crown of Rodeo, which will soon expire. Anyway, he's had some catastrophic things happen to him, including losing his mom to ovarian cancer 7 years ago. And she and Sydney died like 7 years within a day of each other. But like, do you remember when the Flow Riders, which was RC's buddy group, which included Jarrah Bazane, Caleb Bennett, Clint Lay, they all shaved their heads. That was cool. Anyway, it's just an awful lot of loss for one family. So I'm saying prayers, love to RC and Ty and all of those people. Because that, I mean, she leaves three little kids behind. And that's a scary thing. RC and Sydney were at Wendy's side when she died. And now Sydney's gone. So 27 years old. In brighter news, Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame has announced their class of 2024. And that will be March 28th at Billy Bob's in Fort Worth. So we all know Thomas Garcilaso, the great Charo, and that he recently retired his famous Palomino Hollywood. Fallon Taylor, the barrel racer, world champion barrel racer, is being inducted this year.
So is it Tomas or Hollywood?
Tomas is getting inducted. I'm just mentioning Hollywood as an aside. Tomas is being inducted. Fallon Taylor is being inducted, world champion. And, you know, Fallon Taylor is a very controversial, is kind of a dumb way to put it, but I feel like a lot of people have sort of a love-hate thing with Fallon Taylor. It's not like we're close personal friends. I don't know her well, but I have always appreciated that she will do it her way. I love the sass and pizzazz that she comes back at people with. You know, if people criticize her for wearing a helmet or whatever it is, she does things her way. She's very smart. She's a very savvy businesswoman. And I give her such big props for her. You know, she's smart, she's spunky, and she's sassy, and she's not going to take anybody's shit. And I do appreciate that.
She's very, very intelligent, very classy. And I'll tell you, I was a part of a couple broadcast things where Fallon shot some stuff. She would be an amazing, color commentator, right? She speaks very, very well, delivers very, very well. And I've always thought that before long, I'll see Fallon doing something like that because she's got the qualities to do that. Very well presented, can talk to you about anything. And you're right. You know, you look at her color, her flash, her confidence, which is very important for the young women out there, the young girls, to see that it's okay to be confident, right? But she's also professional. So there's a line there, right, of there's confidence and then there's arrogance. Does that make sense? There's confidence.
Yes, and she dares to be different. And you know who I've seen a little bit of this? A little bit of shades of Fallon lately that I have seen out of Haley Kinzel. When people want to, you know, the armchair quarterbacks who want to talk about, oh, sister went by the first barrel when she sets a new arena record somewhere, you know, and she's made a couple little, you know, sizzlers back in interviews and different things. And I'm like, yeah, good for you. Anyway, to round out this class of 2024 in the Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame, there's Dave Scott III and Skeeter Hagler with the Spirit of Texas Award going to Ray Svensson. So anyway.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's cool. Let's talk back to the Super Bowl. The rodeo world is still clamoring over Reba McEntire singing the national anthem, which that was so freaking cool. And everybody knows the story now because it's been well documented. But 50 years after she got her start by singing, Clem McSpadden hires her to sing the anthem at the 1974 NFR in Oklahoma City. And then Red Steagall takes note of her, takes her to Nashville, and there you go. So cool, I thought. The obvious is the positive mainstream press for rodeo. But the fact that Reba wore her Hall of Fame Cowboy Dad's 1957 gold buckle, steer roping buckle, and Jackie McEntire was a dear friend of mine. She was part of our Hands Rodeo Women's Group. And Reba wore her dad's gold buckle and her mom's turquoise bracelet. And, you know, that's cool. Like, that's not forgetting where you came from and being, you know, true to your roots and all that. I thought that was super cool.
Well, the first thing all of us noticed, those of us that are in the game, could see what that buckle was, right? We can just tell by the shape and the design. And so that was a huge shout out to Reba, who's always embraced her roots. Her sister, I mean, I grew up around them. I mean, literally, more her sister. But, you know, that's not the only Western lifestyle major kind of media appearance. So I was sitting watching TV, and you can't watch anything. When you finish, I don't know about you guys, but when you finish a series on Netflix now, or you're like, oh no, what do I do? Episode 9's over of Lioness, and what do I do? And someone Google when the next one's coming. So we were in that hole. What do? We have nothing to watch. And then, well, the Grammys are on. Do you want to watch the Grammys now? And so I clicked over on the Grammys. And as soon as it came on, within 2 or 3 minutes, Beyonce, who I think is beautiful, she's standing there. And she's standing there with a Stetson, like one of the Shasta 10X gray mist cowboy hat with a normal crease. And a Louis Vuitton that probably costs the same as a Bentley on her, and standing there and just kind of the look was just really cool. And to have a real cowboy hat, right? Not, and again, I'm not criticizing those people that have the cowboy hat that they bought at the Denver International Airport on backwards. I would rather them wearing a cowboy hat than not, but this was a real hat, like a Stetson hat, a gray mist. She looked great. It was really, so again, we're kind of showing up and showing out in lifestyle.
Well,
now,
that's
Greg,
cool.
did you say you think she's some songs
she's
or something?
She released two songs. I don't know if you saw the Verizon commercial that she made for the Super Bowl, but in that commercial, she mentions dropping some music, and she dropped two songs, and they have a little bit of a country vibe to them, so it kind of matches the hat. So,
well, and we didn't pre-talk about this, but I have to mention, since we're talking about celebrities, the passing of Toby Keith is a big deal. I remember, and we didn't talk about this, so I am completely left-handing my two co-pilots here, but I remember on a Thanksgiving, Kendra, I don't know if you're with us at PBR. I remember on a Thanksgiving in Austin, Texas, Randy Bernard decided to bring Toby Keith to the PBR event. And it was a very expensive endeavor, caused a bunch of internal conversations. And so here we are Thanksgiving in Austin on the campus at the Coliseum there. And I go to get Toby Keith from the dressing room for rehearsals, to make sure that we wouldn't blow him up with pyro and stuff like that, and to hear the audio. And that building is concrete tunnels to the dressing rooms. And I would say it's probably 8 feet tall. And he barely fit down the tunnel. Like, he had to, like, really squat down to the fact that we talked about his getting his leg workout to get to the arena. A monster human with such a soft voice. Like, I got to meet him and talk to him, and he was just, I think that's why it's so, you're seeing so much of this about Toby Keith, because when you have these monster shell figures that have this really kind heart, he went out, he sung, we did the PBR with Toby Keith. And so then during the NFR, I saw that he was in concert. And I think I might even mention this when we were in our NFR run. And I said, I'm going to go see Toby because, you know, I know he's sick and nobody really knew. And I'm so glad I went to that concert. And it was horrible to see, like, he was tiny. He was tiny. That cancer was eating him up. But I'll tell you, Jamie, Donna didn't get to come in. She stayed home with the grandbaby. So Jamie Brown and I went. And when he sang "Don't Let the Old Man In" at the end, and now having him passed, whoo-wee. I mean, you know, so I know I didn't talk to you guys about that, but he's an icon.
You know, he is an icon, and what a sing-along while we were driving person. And I have a super happy memory of he played after the rodeo at the Cow Palace in San Francisco one year when my kids were little. My kids are now 29 and 31. And those boys and I were out in the arena dancing in the dirt and we had a blast. And for some reason, I remember that Nellie Miller's dad, Sam, was there. He's a really quiet guy. But when you think about Toby Keith, there's all these different songs that you've heard 1,000 times at a rodeo or whatever. But like, How Do You Like Me Now is just so satisfying. Like, the first boss I ever had, who was just a black-hearted human, that song, like, you know, you think of people who've tried to stop you when you hear that song, or I do. Every time I hear that song, I'm like, yeah, you son of a bitch. You know what I mean? It's really, like, he pulled emotions out of us, Toby Keith did. So, good for him.
I did two different openings with Toby Keith songs. One right after 9/11. Of course, us PBR folks continued onward after 9/11. But at our world finals, he had just released a song. First standing ovation that we got in an opening ceremonies was with that. And the second standing ovation out of four that I've been blessed to be given with in opening ceremonies was in Dallas. And I used American Soldier and did a pantomime with a true American soldier and his wife and his two kids, and him saying goodbye to them and walking down the arena. And I think it's the message that he had in all of his songs. And, you know, at the concert in Vegas, he said, yeah, when I was writing Old Man, Don't Let the Old Man In, my wife knew to leave me alone. And Donna kind of chuckled and said, all of us that are married to you, you're in show business, know when to leave you alone. You know, when you're in show mode and in creative mode. And he talked about Clint Eastwood. It's just, I don't know. I mean, there's been plenty about social about Toby, but because of the PBR and Austin and, you know, him and Troy Aikman, there's a handful of people in my life that I remember when I walked up to meet him, I thought, oh my God, this is a monster. Toby Keith was one, Troy Aikman was another, and LeBron James was the last one. We were doing the World's Toughest Rodeo in Cleveland. They had a basketball game the night before. LeBron James was there. I met LeBron James. He's the size of, he's unbelievably huge. And he shook my hand and his whole hand came up to my elbow. I mean, so one of the top three most giant people that I've ever met, and Toby Keith was in there. I mean, he's a football player. He's a big dude. So cool.
Huge. Okay, so sticking to the track of mainstream press, the American Contender Tournament Finals was just held in Abilene. There was a 2-hour show Sunday morning on Fox Sports 1, and that's cool, and that's good for rodeo. The American, which is March 9th, will also air on Fox Sports 1, and that's good for all of us, everybody in a cowboy hat. Something that's new at this year's American that I just found out about is that There's going to be the AQHA Horse of the Day Award, and I believe it's going to be determined by fan voting. There were a lot of cool horses that stand out, you know, from the contender finals that we're going to get to see at the American. So, I mean, I think it's really cool. One that stood out to me from Abilene this last week is Ty Erickson's Black Bulldogging Horse Crush. He has now advanced two guys, given two guys out of Abilene a chance at the Million this year, Ty and past American champ Matt Reeves. And I don't know if Hazing Horses are eligible for this new award, but Reeves, Baymare Beamer was over there on the hazing side for both of them. So that was cool. I know we're going to maybe place our bets, you know, on some stuff about the American, but always cool part of this rodeo that sets it apart is how the contenders who are eligible for that million, which by the way, some of the people that we really would have expected to advance to the American, including the first ever overnight millionaire Richmond champion, did not advance. So we're going to see some new storylines, but cool for some of the same reasons, including like kids going against, you know, in the breakaway. I think we have teenagers, we have 50 something year olds in, you know, a JJ Hampton kind of a thing. And like getting to see men barrel race, we don't see that at rodeos. And I'm extra intrigued by a 5 year old barrel horse that won Abilene. His name is MJ Seeger's Fastlane. Renowned Futurity trainer Brandon Colon is riding him. I was just visiting with one of my other brothers. Jeff Switzer was an NFR saddle bronc rider, and he raises a lot of barrel horses now. And he was telling me that this horse that is going to be one to watch, you know, at the American, is actually owned by Rael and Grant Little. And that didn't ring a bell, but Rael, people would have known her as Rael Robinson. She's a two-time NFR barrel racer. And her husband, Grant, my understanding, is, remember the Canadian Mounted Police? They used to come to rodeos sometimes when I was a kid. The Mounties used to come to the cow palace. My understanding is Rael and Grant, that Grant used to be a Mountie. And they own this hot rod barrel horse now. And so anyway, I think that's pretty cool. And in a total shift of gears, I'm going to shift to the bull riding, because earlier today I talked to Sage Kimsey, and there's more to say about him sometime soon. Not for today, but for today, he's having elbow surgery this Friday, February 16th in Austin. I did not understand that 7 years ago he hurt his riding arm elbow, which is his right arm, and that he's been kind of trying to get around it and manage it for 7 years. I was not aware that it got yanked on real bad in round 8 at the NFR in December, and that kind of did it in. But there's arthritis and bone spurs and pretty significant, you know, surgery he's having this week. And his hope is to be back by mid-summer, mid-July, in time for the PBR teams. So I certainly wish our 7-time champ of the world well. And so there's that.
On a random note, I went to the PBR event here in Salt Lake City. It was good to see some of their guys come back. It was a good event. And I was thinking about Sage kind of as I was watching that event. But back to the American. A couple things on the American. I think it's interesting that they held their contender tournament at Abilene. And for these people, these contenders that are traveling from all of these regions, you know, they have to come to Abilene and then come back to Globe Life Field. That seems like a lot, but maybe Abilene worked out better for them. The barrel racing. So I've been in arguments on some of the events that I've done about the younger kids riding barrel horses, right? Well, they only weigh 19 pounds. Yeah, but they're still riding juice. And they're still out riding. And I understand the weight makes a difference, but these are kids that are probably, you know, they're not as mature. The emotions are high. They might have the weight, but I think it sure balances out when these young kids are able to compete at a high level on a high level animal, a hot animal like that. So And it's still awkward. I got to be honest. It's awkward for me when I see a dude ride in the barrel race. I don't have a problem with it. Like, they're great riders. It's just, you got to understand, I've got 39, 40 years of conditioning in me that when I see it, it's always an oh moment. And again, I really don't have any problem with it. It's just one of those things that just doesn't seem normal.
It's not the norm of what we're used to at the rodeos, for sure. And on a note about talking about the little kids, I don't remember which year it was, and there's no need to name a name, but there was a little girl on a very, very high powered barrel horse. And I remember that I wrote something afterwards because I felt so badly that, I love it when my phone pings and it's a video from one of my kids. It's a roping video. And I felt badly for that little girl. What you talk about, you know, it's super fun and super cool. Maybe it's an 8-year-old or whatever. Okay, that's fun. But then when they keep advancing and they keep advancing and there's more stories and the spotlight's getting hotter. Well, in this particular case, we got all the way to the final showdown at the American and it didn't go well. And that, I was over by where people rode out after their run, and that little girl was bawling and she was so devastated that she had like made a mistake and all this, everybody, you know, was hoping she'd win and all the storyline was about her. And I just remember that I wrote something about, you know, I just hoping and praying that this was not going to like ruin her little life, you know, like, hey, yeah. We have to be careful as adults that we try to keep it in some sort of a normal range for these little bitty kids, because I don't want them to think that they disappointed all of us if, you know, they don't win on the last day.
But the money's in the stories and money drives everything. And so it's all about, you know, it's all about the stories. But you make a point. The kids in our business, all of the kids of our contract personnels and cowboys, and you know, they're our future. And I don't think there's a profession out there that cares more, loves their kids more. And we need to, I agree. We need to be conscious of that. You know, while we're talking about the American, some of our no spinners may not know who qualified. So here's what I was thinking. I was just going to run through the list of the people that qualified. And just to remind everybody, the top five in the PRCA at the end of the year are automatically qualified. Those guys are not, those five are not allowed to compete for the million. I think they're competing for, are they competing for 100 grand each in each discipline? Do you know, Kendra, the outside the $1 million bonus?
The people who were seated in compete for 100,000, yes.
It's 100,000 a discipline.
So does not count toward the world standings.
Could they come in through the contender side?
No.
Like if they couldn't compete and try for the million that way?
No. And there was also a bit of controversy going into the contender, the contender deal is because they let team ropers rope with different partners, but to get into it, but they weren't going to allow them to advance with another partner originally. Like, and they didn't tell the team roper. So you could get in by roping two different ways, back end and front end. But if you qualified onto the American, you didn't have two shots, which now the way I understand it, I don't have the rules in front of me and I don't know. But the way I understand it is they ended up go ahead and saying, if you qualify twice in, you get to qualify into the American. So there was a little bit of drama in that they worked out. But I thought I would run through this list. And then I thought it would be fun for the no spinners out there and us three to kind of pick our favorite contender. Remember, they're the ones that can win the million in each one of these disciplines. So in case you don't know who made the American, I'm going to start with the bareback riding. The top five that are seated is Keenan Hayes, Jess Pope, Cade Saunier, Clayton Bigelow, and Rocker Steiner. And the contenders are Taylor Broussard, Bradley Miller, Jacob Lees, Cole Reiner, and Tilden Hooper. Now, interesting, Tilden, because we haven't seen a lot of Tilden in a while, and you probably have some info on Tilden, Kendra, but we haven't seen a whole lot of Tilden. And so I'm going to say these contenders again. No spinners. Try to pick who you think might have a shot at getting into that million-dollar round, and then we'll get Greg and Kendra. But I'll, because I'm nice, I'll let Kendra go first. So you got Taylor Broussard, Brady Miller, Jacob Leeds, Cole Reiner. What do you think, Kendra? Who do you think has the best shot at getting into that million-dollar round?
I'm picking Jacob Leeds, and I'm doing it for old time's sake. He comes out of California High School Rodeo Association District 7 with my kids, and he's a great kid. And he struggled in high school, and for me to see him riding freaking Virgil now is just a testament to his will. And I'm team Jacob Leeds.
What about you, Greg?
I'm going to go with Cole Reiner.
Cole's a good pick. And I'm going to go with Tilden. I mean, those locks of love that he has back there and the purple, and just I've known Tilden so long. I think it would be really cool, especially with Tilden's relationship with Casey. So, again, that would be cool. So then we'll quickly go into breakaway in case you haven't heard who made the American. Shelby Bosley Medjid, Haley Williams, Martha Angeloni, Sarah Angeloni, and Taylor Munsell in the five seeded. The contenders, and a lot of these I don't know but one. Well, no, I know a couple. Jordan Joe Hollaball, Bailey Bates, J.J. Hampton, Morgan Sparks, and Josie Connor. So those five had a chance to be a part of the $1 million. And remember, if these people, so it's $1 million total purse, and they qualify for that $1 million round if they win, if they beat, if they're the last person standing in their discipline, they get a part of that $1 million. If there's only one of them out of the nine disciplines, right, then they get all the million. But just so you know, if three different contenders, one in the breakaway, one in the bull riding, win, they share it. Okay, they share that million. It's still a lot of money and pretty cool. So when you're watching the American, that's part of the drama, is to see how many of these, right, contenders are getting into that final round. And as you go through the final round, who, you know, the first contender wins it, you're like, they're a millionaire. And then the second one gets in and you're like, oh, they're a half a millionaire. So anyway, back to the breakaway ropers. You guys see them. Any highlights in that group that you want to pick?
Absolutely. And also, to be clear, if you're the person who is a contender, you not only win the million, but you win the 100,000 that you took away from the seeded people. So you'd get 1.1 million. These contenders, this is a really cool. I know four of them. I'm sure the fifth one is super awesome also. Jordan Joe Hollaball, who's married to NFR calf roper Raymond. She's on Egg Truck Trader team with my son. She's super cool. Bailey Bates is a stud from the Navajo Nation, you know, like Danielle Lohman. And she stuck it on him. We're at Fort Worth. She and Daniel,
yep,
the D-Lo show, both of them. J.J. Hampton, the blaster. I mean, she's my son's real estate agent. She's, what, 53 years old. She's a gunslinger. And Josie Connor, I first met her, like, her family's house in Louisiana had been wiped out by a hurricane. And she's the longtime girlfriend of Riley Webb. And she's a lovely young lady and super talented. So this is a stacked field of contenders. Like, this will be zero surprise if one of these girls wins this.
All right. Barrel racers, Brittany Posey-Tanazi, Lisa Lockhart, Cassie Mowry, Jordan Briggs, and Emily Beisel are the five seated in the American. And if I mess these names up, Kendra, fix me, Brandon Cullens, Dr. Kathy Grimes, Mindy Holloway, Emma Parr, Riley, Joe, Marianne, the contenders in the barrel racing. You talked a little bit about the barrel racing, and pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I'm going for Brandon Cullen, no S on the end of that. And I'm told he's from Maryland, and I've obviously never met him, but people I really like say he is a great guy. He's hilarious, and I'd like to meet him. I think it would be kind of a kick in the pants if he won it.
Greg, anybody on that list that jumps out? Because you can pass.
No, I don't know anybody, but I'm going to go with the doctor.
When in doubt, go with anybody that's a doctor.
Exactly.
All right. Here we go. Top five in the bull riding. Kai Hamilton is qualified but out with an injury. Josh Frost, Stetson Wright, same thing, qualified out with an injury. So that runs us down to Sage Kimsey, who sounds like Sage is out, right, Kendra?
Correct.
Did you say that? Yeah, so yes. Sage is out. So they have listed Trey Kimsey, Creek Young as an alternate, and Jared Parsonage as an alternate. Looks like there's one more alternate in the top five that'll get seated. The contenders, looks like a pretty strong field. Cody Nance, Jeff Askey, Chase Daugherty, Matt Palmer, and Cody Teal, which we'll talk about Cody Teal a little bit later. But Cody Teal, those are the contenders. Any comments from either one of you on those contenders in the bull?
So I do also have a little bit of late breaking news from the Teton Ridge crew is that there will only be 9 bull riders at the American. They have decided not to replace Sage. And here's a quote.
Whoa.
Here it is. In the interest of fairness to the top five bull riding contenders who made the cut in Abilene, it has been determined that Sage Kimsey's PRCA top five spot, which was vacated due to injury, will not be filled. So the four coming in will be Josh Frost, Trey Kimsey, Creek Young, and Jared Parsonage, and then the contenders. So
how can 9. You do that? How can you do that? How can you do that? How can you take – so someone tell me how you can take 2 alternates but not 3. Where's the reasoning, Kendra?
I wasn't in the room.
I understand, but you replaced Kai Hamilton and you replaced Stetson. Sorry, I don't get it. Sorry, that does not seem right to me at all. We have to look. Who is after Jaron Parsonage in the 23 standings? Because that's who's affected here, right? Whoever was after Jared is the one that would have qualified because they go right down the list from 1 down. Interesting. I bet that's not over, Kendra.
All right. I don't know. That just says up today.
Interesting. All right, real quick, because I think some of you may not know, we're into team roping. Tyler Wade, Wesley Thorpe. These are the ones that are seated. Clint Summers, Jake Long, Andrew Ward, Buddy Hawkins, our good friend Derek Begay and Coulter Todd, Luke Brown, and Hunter Koch. The contenders, Brenton Hall and Caden Profili. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's Hunter Cook for your future reference. Go ahead.
Hunter Cook. Okay, sorry, I won't say that again. Core, you read them.
Coy Rallman and Billy Jack Savins.
Yeah. Shea Carroll, Logan Moore. Dustin Esqueza and Travis Graves, right?
And Clay Smith and Nikki Northcutt.
That's an interesting pairing there.
Yes, yeah. Nikki Northcutt's 17 years old. He's going to hail from my son Taylor at the timed event. 17.
Must be a gun, huh? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, then we get into bronc riding. You know, Zeke is in, and he's hot. Sage Newman, Cade Bruno, Brody Kress, Damian Brennan. The contenders, which I thought was a pretty stacked field, Dawson Hay, Ryder Sanford, Shea Fournier, Logan Hay, and Mitch Pollock.
One thing that I think super cool, as you know, Roddy Hay was a great friend of mine all those years. What was he, a 16-time NFR bronc rider? To have both of his kids riding there is cool. Remember last year, Dawson Hay was in the two-man write-off at the end when there was a tie? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And he lost the write-off, but pretty cool that he's back. You know, that'd be a pretty fun storyline, too, if after losing the write-off, you know, he would come back. That's fun to watch. And by the way, Shea Fournier, I believe, is David Fournier, NFR bull rider, PBR bull rider's son, right?
Yep. And I had him highlighted. I'd like to see Shea. And the kind that, you know, I'll be honest, the National Western, even in the bareback riding, but the bronc riding. So last year in the bareback riding, the rookie field in the bareback class at the National Western, I was like, wow. Okay. And they turned out all the way to the NFR. It was that way for me in the bronc riding this year. There were guys that I had just briefly heard of, some of these on this list that can ride broncs. Now, Zeke is still Zeke. So, you know, I mean, that it's a, it's not going to be easy to win that. Greg, any, I mean, you're a Bronc rider from way back. Anything on the Bronc riding?
Yeah, I like Logan Hay. I think he could probably pull something off here.
Yeah. Mitch Pollock, very good Bronc rider. All right, into the steer wrestling, which, you know, Kendra has her oat glow, so she's usually well ammoed up when talking about steer wrestling. Wags, Massey, Brown, Branko, and Struckness, those are the guys that are in the seeded five. Contenders, Ty Erickson, Matt Reeves, Stephen Mullins, Will Loomis, Dakota Eldridge. I'm going with Will Loomis. That guy's, I think he's on fire. I bet you he gets a piece of that million.
It's interesting because this steer wrestling could be a finals at any rodeo, professional rodeo, right? All these guys. I got to go with Dakota, though.
Oh, Dakota's a good pick.
All right.
Will, I'll say on Will, there. I got the giggles over. We're going to talk about San Antonio, I think, briefly in a minute, but one of our old-time world champion steer wrestlers was making some commentary about the young bucks, whatever. And Will Loomis came on with a comment, and he simply put the flipping the bird emoji, and I got the giggles for 20 minutes. And I thought that was – and a little twist happened with Will at San Antonio where the steer so would not stand that he ended up getting the extra and winning that round of his bracket. That was kind of an interesting – that's a pretty big twist to run the extra and win it. So anyway, go ahead.
So tie down roping, the five that are seated, Riley Webb, Haven, Mayfield, Caleb Smith, and Tuff Cooper. That one, I got to say, surprises me. Given the history with the American, that's surprising to me. So be it. The contenders, Shane Hanchey, J. Cody Jones, Kincaid Henry, is that Cargill, I think? I think so. I don't know that I know him. Do you know that gentleman?
I don't.
Yeah. So, you know, Hanchey's been on fire, and to be in the contender round, that's got to make you think that thing could be broke up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's been on fire and also riding a 5-year-old. So interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to
go back, Greg. Real quick. The bull rider that would be eighth last year was Jeff Askey.
Well,
now wait a minute. Scroll back up there. Wasn't Askey on the list of contenders? Hello? That might be your answer.
Oh, he is. Oh, that might be. That is the answer.
Ooh, okay. Boom. So I take That's back. Big.
So I take back. That was good. We figured it out. Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
So he got in, but he could still. Okay.
This is juice.
Yeah, I can see the reason now, right? Right? I still, though, think there's still probably an argument, but I'm sure there must have been rules written that said if you qualify, because here's what I bet happened. Think about this, because I remember having this conversation. If you're Jeff Askey, right, and you qualify as a contender, you don't want to be forced back up into the top five.
Hello.
Because you don't have a shot at $1 million. So that's what's going on here. He wants to be a contender. Because if he wins, he wants to win 1.1, not one. So they probably called him and said, hey, Jeff, guess what? Congratulations. You're one of the top five seeders.
Greg, are you going to say it or am I? No shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
Captain Obvious.
Well, but it's not so obvious for everybody. Well, okay. But that's probably – that makes it make more sense. Let's finish it up with something, Kendra. Bring us something good. Throw a curveball here.
Well, this isn't a curveball, but I'll make mention. I'll keep it brief on San Antonio. You know, San Antonio is in full swing. We're only into the third bracket right now as we're recording this podcast. I think there's a couple things that stand out to me. One is that it's been very fun to see some of the kids who earned a spot through the qualifier at Uvalde step up and shine, including teenage tie down roper Guy Rash. He did well. And a pair of 18-year-old bull riders last night, Jeter Lawrence and Gavin Houck. They're 18 years old, and they split for the, they tied for the win last night in the bull riding. That's really cool. I mean, these are kids. One of them's sort of a local, and he's got all these family there. He's 18. And some of these qualifiers that are really young, they're like, you know, I earned a rodeo scholarship, you know, as a young youth here at this rodeo, you know. And to see that, that's super cool. Of note, I think another thing that's really stood out so far is that the bulldogging is getting a little extra attention for two reasons. One, the steers, and there seems to be sort of a mixed bag. We've seen three pens of steers so far, and they're all pretty different. The first bracket steers were bigger and stronger. The second ones were weaker. Some of them checked off, even borderline, just kind of barely made it out the end of the shoot gate and stopped, or, you know, checked off to the right, or just straight stopped. The third set, I think people felt like looked a little better. You know, I don't know. One thing I will say, these are M branded steers, you know, from Mexico, but something that has evolved over time, I think it's partly economic and partly from restrictions of crossing cattle. The steers used to have bigger, more horn, which is favorable to the bulldoggers. And these cattle are younger. And a lot of people have been saying, you know, they've got team roper horns on them, you know, and more cattle are being missed or slipping horns or whatever. And those smaller horns, that, you know, that's a factor. Anyway.
Well, we saw the same. I'm interested if it's the same cattle that were in Denver, because we had the same thing in Denver. There were a lot of missed horns, a lot. And the cattle pens in Denver, I noticed the same thing. There were substantial differences in the pins in the rounds.
Well, and the thing about it is about the brackets. I mean, one person could argue, as long as they're pinned to give everybody an equal chance within that bracket. But if one doesn't even clear the gate before he checks off, I don't know about that. Anyway, here's something. This is significant. There's a ground rule. If a steer dog falls or hangs a leg, the flagger has been instructed to hold the flag and make the bulldogger get the steer back up and rethrow him. And here's what I'll say from watching it on TV. It does not look like the cowboys mostly are aware of this ground rule. So the flagger's doing what he's been told to do by the PRCA, the event director, and the committee. But I'll give an example. It was clear to me watching that, like Dalton Massey, as an example, he did not know that that rule was in place. And he got up and his body language was basically, you know, what the hell? But you could also see that the line judge was explaining it to him after the fact. And I guess I would hope that for such high stakes that, you know, hopefully it's posted. I mean, does that mean not everybody saw it? That seems so significant for such a big rodeo that it's just worth mentioning.
Well, you got to know. Probably this. Need to clarify. Yeah, we got to clarify the rule. Now, for one, if my sources are right, this rule was implemented in Houston last year, and let's talk about what the rule is. The way I understand the ground rule: if a steer dog falls or hangs a leg, you've got to let them get up. You can't wrench them over.
Right. Right. Right.
You can't wrench them over, which I support that. Now, I don't support if these guys don't know. However, this goes back, Kendra, to what we've mentioned before in this. You are responsible to understand the rules of the game you're playing in. And maybe if you're also keeping track of your winnings, you know, and making sure that the PRC is right on that, maybe you ought to glance at the ground rules and make sure you know. This isn't a brand new rule, so it's done in Houston.
Okay.
And it's done in Calgary. It's done in Calgary.
I'll also say this, though. This rule, especially, I mean, I can see if you've got one folded in half, you know, but that there are times when a steer hangs a leg for a very split small portion of a second, like maybe a tenth or two. And this, that line in real time for a flagger, if you think the crossfire rule is tricky and very hard to get right, this one, I mean, it, you know how it goes. A steer can hang a leg and it's like, bam, bam. And the fourth leg's all the way out and it's done. Well, and
it depends on what you're saying, hang a leg. To me, hanging a leg would be the body of the steer's over and that leg is on the correct side, but is being hampered by the dirt, right? Or, you know, just that weight in the dirt, but the body of the steer. But then there's hanging the leg, I think, and I don't know if it's defined as that, but you know, where it's past the body, right? So there, that leg is plumb up underneath him, right? And I think the intent of the rule is to not have to, you know, here's the deal. There was a steer with a significant injury in the past in rodeo as a result of this type of fall. And they're trying to avoid that. That's understandable. And we need to pay attention to that, the welfare of the animals, and creating rules and policies that eliminate any of that. I see what you're saying in that, you know, if you barely hang a leg, you know, you shouldn't have to get back up and do that. I think it's another one of those deals where how do you define that? Like, I'm not sure how a flagger would define that. So to me, you either, if you're hanging something or a dog falls, you got to get up, right? That's the only clearly way you could see it if you were flagging and riding a horse. Because you, how you could tell the level of hanging that leg, does that make sense? You know, is that, that's a permissible hang of the leg to allow you to wrench the steer, because we know that his leg will come out easily. I just don't know how you do that. I don't feel sorry if they don't know the rules. I'm sorry. I don't, now I'm assuming they were posted, like at the American, a lot of these guys weren't even aware that they couldn't get back to the American with a separate partner. That's different to me. But if these were posted, and what I understand, this was a ground rule, it was written and posted, you know, well, you gotta know your business.
That's fair. And in this case, it'll be an advantage to not be in one of the first sets, because I promise you, everybody's watched all of it. And now, by the time now rolls around, people know about it now. It's all good. Let's move along. In fact, do you want to take a quick pause for feedback?
Yeah. What do we got for feedback, Greg?
Yeah. It was kind of interesting. We did get a couple pieces of feedback concerning what we talked about last podcast about breakaway rigging for bull riding and rough stock events. A lot of guys said
bareback riding. Yes. Bareback riding.
Yeah, but we had mentioned bull riding too in our conversation. The points they were making is that stuff's already available. You can go out and buy it. It's not a release on the handle. It's a release on the cinch itself. So it's actually designed where a rider can actually release it if they're hung up themselves, because it'd be right there where they are, and the picket man can do it too. The catch is that it's not allowed by the rules of the PRCA.
And I think we knew that because we were wondering if that's something that should be considered. The premise that the trip mechanism can be pulled off by the bareback rider or the bull rider, I think it was mainly bareback riding.
Yeah, it was mainly bareback riding.
That's baloney. Now maybe they could, but mainly if a pickup man could come up and undo a guy. We knew it was not permitted. But for me, the argument was, could you allow that in the game right now? And would that be a wise move? And would we have to make everybody do it? Now, I think my argument was the handhold, that would significantly change the game. And so, I mean, with the D-ring popping off, maybe it doesn't have any impact on the way they ride. You know what I mean? How they prepare and ride, that's simply a safety mechanism. Maybe that's the case. I would have to do more research.
And
but that's valid.
And a lot of these guys were saying that it should be a rider's choice. Like, it, if you don't want to have it, if you feel it affects the way that that, you know, hangs on, then you should have a choice, just like wearing a helmet and bull riding.
Yeah. Kendra, do you have any, if it doesn't affect their ability, if it doesn't give them an advantage or a disadvantage, competitive advantage or disadvantage, then I think I could advocate that they could decide.
I feel like we need more information, because I'd like to know the reason it's not allowed. Is it the stock contractors who don't want it? Who doesn't want it? Is it the cowboys or the stock contractors or the PRCA? Who wants it? Who doesn't? I'd like to hear both arguments before I would know.
There's the rule says no quick trips are allowed on bareback riggings. So I don't know. I don't know what the advantage to, if you allowed it, if it gives an advantage to somebody, I don't see it.
Well, and it may be that it's something to do with the animal. I think Kendra's right. Let us both, Kendra and I, will do some research on this. We'll try to find out if there's some specific, with the PRC, someone out there, there's some specific reasoning, or maybe that this is just a hindsight, right? One of those things that just hasn't been brought up. So it hasn't been entertained. I don't know the answer, but I'll find out. I'll find out if the people that make the rules and policies know about this, and if there's a reason they're not allowing it. And Kendra, if you survey any of your Rolodex to get any deeper information on this, it seems right to me, like if it doesn't affect the competition or the animal, I'll say the animal, because I think you got a point, Kendra. I don't know that it does. The cinch have to be tighter. Like, again, I just don't know.
I don't know. All right. I know is how this came to my attention was that this older cowboy gentleman says he's been fighting for this for 50 years and he's been shut down. But I don't know all the ins and outs of why. So,
well, any other feedback, or was that it?
That was it for this week. Just to remind everybody, the number is 817-668-2395, or you can email us at nospinfeedback@gmail.com.
Well, you know, we're right in the heart of the beginning of the season. I look through the leaders. You know, there's a close race between Statler and Brody Kress and the Saddle Bronc Riding. You know, all of the rest of the races are $7,000 to $10,000 apart. Big rodeos coming up with Houston and San Antonio finishing. We'll keep you up to speed. I would encourage all of you, if you don't agree with what we're saying, or you have something to add, like, it's not in the handle of the bareback rigging the breakaway. Tommy Joe, you're an idiot. Perfect. Send that in. We're about spreading communication. We're about what you think about rodeo. Give us new topics. If you want to hear us banter on something, pitch it out there. We're open for that. And we appreciate you subscribing and downloading and listening to No Spin Rodeo. We will keep you informed. Remember, we might not tell you what you want to hear, but we will tell you the truth. So, Kendra, any final words?
I guess we're going to leave it there.
How should we stop it?
I think we want to mention the situation that happened in Fort Worth with Cody Teal's family.
Yeah, no, you're right. We can't stop here. The child nabbing. The child nabbing. At the hospitality room, you're right. I forgot all about that. The child nabbing at the hospitality room at Fort Worth. First off, please don't take what I just said as me putting any levity to someone being concerned about their child being taken. That was not the intent. There's a lot of fodder about that. In case you didn't hear, and Kendra, you can probably clarify this because you're the journalist, but Cody Teal's daughter was in the hospitality room, and one of the volunteers took the daughter out of the hospitality room up an elevator. They realized that the daughter was gone. They went to the elevator operator, who, the way I understand it, said, "Oh, I know where she went. She's in good hands. Let me text the lady that took her," and pretty soon the young girl showed back up at the hospitality
room. I thought the way I read it is that they made it to the elevator and were turned back around. But either way,
I think they made it to the concourse. At least that's the way I read it.
Okay. So I'm not sure. So So as a, just a preface, I will say, you know, we are parents and we even have itty bitties as grandbabies now. So, you know, no one would be alive if anything happened to our kids or grandkids. Like, so let's go at it that way. A lot of people have tagged me and like trying to pull me into this story. And to that I say, I wasn't there. And the Teals have, you know, there's two sides to every story. The Teals have done a very clear job on two significant posts that spell out their how they saw the thing go down. And Cody said, you know, he was criticized by some people that said he didn't look all that happy when he was presented, you know, the wares for winning Fort Worth in the arena, but he didn't feel like he'd gotten enough good answers from the highest up. And how I feel as a journalist is that if both of those parties, you know, wanted me to, here's their side. Like what I did at what happened at Houston last year, where there was a huge controversy. And I said, here's this side and here's this side. You know, that's what a journalist's job is. In this particular situation, it is my understanding that this is a possible legal matter, and even with the possibility beyond the police of the FBI, whether or not that happens, I don't know. Again, I was not there. Then this needs to be handled directly as a legal matter. And so if people, you know, want someone like me to jump in and go, yeah, you know, forget it, because on the one hand, you know, anybody picking up and taking somebody's kids out of a room, you can't do that. Okay. Now, I don't know what the circumstances. Hey, the person who did it could have been a lovely grandmother, could have been a crazy person. I have no idea. So it would be silly of me to say, especially as a journalist, my opinion of this person or anything like that, because I wasn't there. On the flip side, I've also had a few cool-headed rodeo people say, let's let this play out with the people that were there, because what nobody wants is for all cowboys to lose hospitality rooms, which are so appreciated, you know? So if one person made a terrible mistake, well, you know, maybe they can get to the bottom of that and figure it out. You know, I just don't know.
Well, the problem for all of us, for a lot of us, not for me, because I honestly don't believe most of what I read on that little square device that we all have in front of our face. We assume that everything we read on social and or blogs and all of that is the truth. And I think what you're saying and what I agree with is that there isn't enough detail on from both sides of what's going on here. It just sounds funky. It sounds funky on both sides to me. It sounds fishy. Why on earth would anybody do that for one? What was the motivation if it was the case? And again, it's so funny to me. These people read this stuff and then they come to a conclusion. Well, here's what should happen.
You know, but with somebody having a terrible lapse of judgment, if after they see the footage or, you know, if they get to the very bottom of it, the people who were there, if they get to the very bottom of it and find out that someone made a terrible lapse in judgment, that is a far cry from people on social media saying, well, this woman was clearly involved in human trafficking. That's a pretty big leap. And, you know, and so,
yeah, I can't imagine the fear of looking around and not, we've all done it every now and then in our careers, right? In our lives as parents, looked around and had that moment where we're like, oh my God, right? What do I do now? And so I'm not taking anything away from that. I just think that I hope, and maybe we stay on it, we need to know the facts on both sides, because none of it really adds up. And there's a lot of things in this world that don't add up. You know, the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo is, you know, I grew up there, and these are all good people. That doesn't mean that there's not a bad egg in the group, but there's just something about it. I agree with you. Let's see what we find out. Maybe you or I will hear, and we can report, you know, with more detail on this. But we do understand that it's being investigated, and that should happen. Like, I think that's exactly what should happen. If it were my rodeo and this happened, I would have an independent investigator figure out what's going on, right? Who either had bad judgment or bad motive. Again, we don't know. If it's bad motive, bad judgment, misinterpretation, you know, I mean, I've heard lots of different things that I'm not going to bring up because there's zero. I don't know. And I'm not going to talk
and
about
a lot of it.
I don't know.
A lot of the banter is thrown out there on social media by people who were not there. And so, you know, in no circumstances would it ever be okay with anyone in rodeo to ever harm a child. Okay, obviously. I would also say, you know, if whatever this comes down to, how Fort Worth is supposed to handle this, it gets very interesting because obviously if you're Fort Worth, you're not going to go to the local newspaper probably and say, we want to make a big deal about the fact that a child was taken, you know, that's silly or whatever. But how is Fort Worth supposed to get their side of the story out within the rodeo community is a fair question, you know?
And maybe it needs to be done.
You know, and the facts are the facts are the facts, but we don't know what they are. So who would we be to conclusively have a strong opinion? Because we don't know. We know we're not for harming children, and nobody is. Fort Worth's not for harming children either. But how this was handled, we don't know.
We don't know, and we hope that, you know, we hope that this investigation proves more about it and emotions and reactions. But what's really irritating are, again, we see it all the time, these people that take what they read and then they run with it, right? They act like they're a journalist and run with it with zero truth.
And that's when they start embellishing and twisting things around. And I'll also say on the outset, I do not know Caitlin Teal. I know Cody Teal very, you know, on a very limited basis from over the years. And I've never heard one crossword. All I've ever heard about the both of them is that they're wonderful people and wonderful parents. So if anybody's out there pot-shotting, you know, them as parents, that's silly too. We all once, you know, we're all very thankful that that little girl is fine. And it concerns all of us, you know, for all children. So we don't have the answer.
Well, and like you always say, when we have tough news, here's what we all need to be thankful for. As the little girl's back with her family, it was a short amount of time. And the rest of the picture will come in color. Now we will, when we know the facts, our listeners will know the facts. Right. When we get the facts and we understand them, then we will sure tell you. But as of right now, we just don't know. We just don't know all the facts. We know she's safe. She's back home. We know that people were rattled and emotionally scared. And we also know that a bunch of you online are complete lunatics when you start throwing your thumbs at how this happened and what went down. Because believe it or not, you're not half as smart as you think you are.
Well, and so, I hate to also... this is, you know, nobody likes that this happened, but there are also thousands of volunteers that put these rodeos on, who take their vacation from work to put this rodeo on. And I hate for those thousands of wonderful people to, if, you know, one person did it, whether it was stupid, whether it was a mistake, whether, you know, whatever lapse of judgment, whatever it was, I do not take away the fact that there are some wonderful things. There was a barrel racer who made an online comment about the fact that they leave the arena open so that any timed event contestants at any time can go in and work their horses. And by the time they got back to the stall after working their horse, some volunteer on the committee had put all new shavings in their stall, you know? And so nobody talks about that, but you know, so I do think that we should also, there were a lot of good things that happened there also. So
yeah, You know how many volunteers clean up manure from athletes that decide that the best place to clean out their trailers in the parking lot?
Oh, and don't think I haven't shamed them. I have shamed so many of them where I stand, they're backing out, and I stop and I wave my hands and I walk up to the window and I say, "You're going to clean that up or am I calling your mother right here on the spot?" And they just turn green. They're so scared. And they clean it up. I'm like, "Do you think a volunteer should shovel up after you?" No. Come on.
Yeah. I'm with you. Come on. Well, good conversation today. Thank you, too. We will see all of you in 2 weeks. We'll have wrapped up San Antonio, and we'll see where we are going into Houston. And we appreciate all of our listeners. Please comment, send, download, share No Spin Rodeo. Tell people about it. You might not love what we say, but you'll find out it's the truth. Until we meet again, Tommy Joe Lucia, Kendra Santos, and Greg Teagarden, this is No Spin Rodeo. You guys have a blessed 2 weeks.